Hello, this is Janet Gowan welcoming you to Love Letters Live with, I know I say this all the time because it's always true, another wonderful person. And as you all know from listening to me for so long, that there's always an opportunity to write a love letter to somebody. Maybe you have a love letter that has meant something to you and changed a life, even if it's for just a moment or a day. And we're going to talk about a life that is filled with opportunities. Guest today is Kathy Buckley, who is an actress, a comedian, a motivational speaker, and an author. And for the rest of it, let's just go to you. And you talk. I had asked you before where you were born, and you started to tell me about the circumstances of your birth, and I said, stop, let's just keep it for this.
Okay.
So start from your beginning.
I was born in Beverly, Illinois, in the Air Force. I was born IH factored, and then a few years later, I developed spinal meningitis.
Well, wait, so you had said to me, which is kind of an indication of, I don't know what, people not being attentive enough, that whatever the Rh factor
changes is when parents' blood don't match. And so they have to transfer the baby's blood. But unfortunately, it has to be done within, I think it's either 28 hours or something, and they didn't have any blood for me.
Uh-huh.
So they brought in a priest instead.
Oh, that's what you would say.
Yeah,
so it was
a priest came in instead to do the blood to give my
last
rites.
So how did that shift into the glorious person you are now?
Well, that's a good thing why God made me deaf. Had I listened to him, I wouldn't be sitting here with you.
Yes.
So
the moment passed and then you were okay?
Well, the time when they finally got a blood transfusion to me, the doctor told my parents both that I was going to be a slow person, that I was going to have challenges because the blood wasn't there fast enough. And then when I was about 3 or 4, I had spinal meningitis. And they got the same information again, that I was going to be slow. Back then, they used the word retarded.
How did they come to that conclusion that if you have one of these problems, that you're going to be slow?
Well, because a lot of times when something like this happens and it's not treated right away.
Well, then that does, in fact, happen.
The brain can happen. It's like being without oxygen.
Yes, okay.
You know, so... So they, you know, this is one of my pet peeves in life, is don't ever tell somebody what they can and cannot do.
Oh, and that's particularly so true in the world of what people call disability.
Yeah, you know.
Because you have to ask yourself, what is that really? Because
the only limitations that you'll ever have is your attitude. It's your outlook on life, and how you're going to move it, how you're going to live it, and how you're going to limit yourself.
Yeah.
And more people that are able-bodied people are more disabled than anybody who's physically disabled, all by their attitude alone.
Oh, for sure. Sometimes the disabilities that show are not the disabilities at all.
Exactly.
Yes. Okay, let's get back to you. At what point was it clear that you were the brilliant, funny person you are and that you would have none of these problems?
I have no idea.
I think of one.
I got to tell you, I was a massage exercise therapist, and everybody kept saying, you know, laughter was my best medicine in healing. Unfortunately, I made fun of the people that were hurting on the table. We go, what the hell were you doing thinking you can pick up that boss at that weight, you know, whatever. And you make them laugh so that you can get into their muscles and really work them. Well, one of my patients was Jerry Jewell, who has cerebral palsy.
Yes.
And
by the way, people who are listening, if you haven't heard Jerry Jewell talk about Jerry Jewell, you want to go back and do that too. Okay, go ahead.
And so Jerry was one of my patients, and I never worked with somebody with cerebral palsy before.
Uh-huh.
In fact, I really didn't understand what cerebral palsy was. It was my first encounter. And so Jerry gets on my table, and she's like a little wiggly worm, you know, this involuntary movement.
Oh, I see what you mean,
to the point where I actually had to get up on the table with her, sit on her butt, so I can actually massage her. And we started becoming friends, and so she came to me, and three other people came to me with this newspaper article called Stand-Up Comic Take a Stand.
Oh, okay.
And so I got this thing, anything that comes to me in threes, it's the Holy Spirit telling me something, they want me to get on this new path. So I told Jerry, I said, I don't know nothing about comedy, I don't hear comedy, I don't get it. Deaf humor and hearing humor are very different.
Are they really?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, we'll talk about that.
Deaf humor, you give the punchline first and then the lead up, which means it's not funny to hearing people.
But why would that matter to deaf people?
Because deaf ASL, if I told you in ASL, my bicycle is broken.
Yes.
And ASL is bike my broke. So everything backwards, like Spanish. Oh. If it's ASL signing. Uh-huh. Because sign language is not English unless you're doing English signing. So anyway, I went to the comedy clubs. I didn't understand. They had the microphone in front of their lips. I didn't know what they were saying. I went home and I rented videos. That's how old I am, video.
Yes. Oh, we can get to that.
Okay, I don't remember 8-track, so I'm still okay.
So floppy discs?
Floppy discs, you remember.
No, but you remember those,
no,
right?
No. Yeah, I do vaguely.
Toss those down the toilet. Yeah, go ahead.
And then, so anyway, I went ahead and got the videos, and they weren't in closed caption. And Robin Williams had the fastest lips I've ever seen in my life, and Whoopi Goldberg's lip barely moved. So I really had no idea what I was getting myself into. And I just said, you know what? It's for the kids. Because the contest was to help raise money for children with cerebral palsy.
Uh-huh.
And in my naive mind, I actually believed that if we can raise enough money, we'd find a cure for Jerry Jewell where I won't have to get seasick lip reading anymore.
Now, can I ask you, can I just take a little detour about lip reading? You are saying that Robin Williams' lips move so fast and Whoopi Goldberg's didn't move at all, but you were already an adult, a working adult. Had you spent a lot of your life lip reading?
My whole life is lip reading to this day.
Oh, okay, so in other words, you still have to see their lips move to lip read.
Lip reading today, even though I have the hearing devices, lip reading to me is still confirming what I'm hearing.
Oh, by the way, that's true of hearing people also.
Yeah, but they still don't listen.
Oh, that's a whole other issue, yes.
That's the difference between me and hearing people. Hearing people hear, I listen.
Okay.
So, by them concerned,
because if I am talking to somebody and my eyes are closed, I don't hear anywhere near as well. It's always confirmation.
Well, that's a good point. It is.
Okay.
So you have to.
So did you learn to sign early?
No, I was not allowed to sign growing up.
Why?
Because there was no other deaf people in my community.
So it wouldn't have helped you.
But no, not really. I was raised with a bunch of Italians. I thought they were signing with a lisp, so I might as well just stay away from them.
Okay. All right. So go back to your own.
I don't know. You keep interrupting. I don't know where the heck I'm going with you, Janet.
I know. That's okay. That's the journey is the thing. But go back to, you thought in your naive mind that if you took part in this contest.
Yeah, I could help Jerry.
You could help Jerry. And so you were there with the microphone in front
of you. Finally got the, I got on stage. I was scared to death. Jerry helped me write a couple of lines. And she was awesome. She helped me out. And so I got on stage and I won that night.
Wow. Do you remember what the thrust of your talk was?
Well, the first thing I had was this big old hand attached to my head that Jerry gave me. And I said, you would think with today's technology, they could come out with a hearing aid that's just a little less obvious than that.
I see. Okay. So you went to kind of deaf humor right away.
Oh, always. It's who I am. I go with humor, with who I am as an individual. And that's just a part of who I am. It's not all I am.
Of course. I was thinking of something on the way here, actually, because I know Jerry was talking about humor related to having cerebral palsy, and I knew a little bit about you before I came. Mm-hmm. Not enough. I'm glad to say I'm learning more. And I was thinking, you know, and her friend who was blind, who got up and did blind humor, mm-hmm. jokes about being blind, and I thought, is that really so important? And then I realized something, that all good humor is about self.
Oh, definitely.
Limitations.
And how are people supposed to learn about differences if you don't share what your difference is?
Yes, and that's a whole other benefit.
Mm-hmm.
But anything funny is a funny look at yourself and your own foibles.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, so that makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm always making perfect sense, Janet.
So I see. Okay.
So I did a contest, and what I didn't know is you had to go to the semifinals.
Oh.
So I ended up placing fourth. Out of 80 comedians who were in the business from 3 to 10 years, I was only in it for the 2 weeks.
And what did that lead you to?
Immediately on the road. It was on national television, that contest. It was scary for me because it went too fast. You know, you live in a quiet world, and then all of a sudden people are polling on you, and you're like, what do you want? You know, it's overwhelming.
So that makes sense. So when I rang your doorbell and you opened the door and said, what do you want?
Exactly.
And slammed the door shut, that really speaks to something. Yeah, so okay.
I like to shock people, whatever.
But that's interesting.
The real true interest of the whole story is I went on the road for a few years and I was doing my comedy. And then I found out a few years later, I was never supposed to be in that contest.
Oh,
Yeah, see, I thought it was a contest for amateurs. Yeah. I don't know anything about this stuff.
Uh-huh.
And Jerry Jewell, since the money was being raised for United Cerebral Palsy, mm-hmm. she knew the producer, and she was in the office one day. And what you had to write a letter and send a picture.
Okay.
A headshot. Well, I don't write well. And I didn't have a headshot, so I sent a Polaroid shot, and I just wrote what I would, like, why would you want to be in this contest?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, I really don't want to be in this contest. Get me out of it. But I wrote this letter the best as I could, and I sent it in. And they said if you didn't hear from them by April 14th, you were not in the contest. Well, April 14th came, and I got no letter. So I was happy. I said, good, I don't have to do this.
Yeah.
Then around April 17th or 18th or something like this, I get this letter that I'm in, and I start sweating bullets. Never thought about it, but years went by, and I found out from the producer I was never supposed to be in that contest.
So talk more about that. I mean, why'd you get the letter if you were not?
So what happened was Jerry Jewell was in the office, and she was talking to Randy Johnson, who was the producer, and she looked over. She was sitting at a desk, and she looked over, and she saw my little Porteroy shot staring at her from the trash can. My letter and my picture were thrown away. And Jerry pulled them out. And Jerry put them out and she goes, why is this in the trash can? He goes, did you see the way she writes? She
can't
even write. How can she possibly do comedy if she can't even write a simple letter? And he says, but, you know, give her a try. You don't know. And so she encouraged him to let me into the contest. And in turn, you know, Jerry never mentioned it. She never mentioned that she did that. What a humble person.
That, well, also, what a delicate friend.
Yeah.
Not to send you the message of the original negative.
And we were not like really close friends at the time. She was just helping me along. But the one lesson I learned from Jerry Jewell is you don't have to stand still. No. The one real lesson I learned from her is that comedy is not a competition. It's an opportunity to help somebody to live their lives, their dreams. So because
through
of what Jerry did for me.
Through your own self-expression.
Yeah, but what Jerry did for me was what I do for many. Any young comic who wants a helping hand, I'm right there with them. And I would guide them. I would help them write them. I would do whatever because it's called paying it forward.
Yes.
And there's never going to be enough people out there to make this world laugh. So why would you not want to keep spreading that love out there?
Oh, nice. As soon as I swallow the lump in my throat, we can just continue right along. I'm going to absolutely get a box of Kleenex. Okay. That's gorgeous. That is so gorgeous.
And Jerry, today, I kind of like it.
Sometimes people in this industry in particular do not help because they don't want the competition.
Well, you know, that's really, like anything in any business. People are very self-focused, and you can't be self-focused.
But it's like
and
you
succeed.
Said, the more people making people laugh, the better we are. And also, laughter is kind of one of those things that the more you do, I think the more you can do.
Well,
once
yeah.
Once you're open to being able to do what more...
Yeah, and she's my sister. I mean, I've always I don't like you, I never liked you, and this and that, but she's my love, she's my sister,
yes.
And... You know, you make your family with the people who are there for you.
Yes, building family is
yes.
a wonderful thing.
It is.
Now, are you in touch? I mean, where is the rest of your actual born family? Are you an
only
child?
I keep them in Ohio. My mom and dad and my one brother's in Ohio. My other brother's out here in California.
Oh, so you've got everybody still
yeah.
there. Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, but I'm allowed to kill him, yes.
And the priest who wanted to give you the last rites, is he still here? Who knows?
I doubt it. I never met him myself.
Okay.
I was
so
too busy dying.
Well, it's not somebody the family knew. Okay.
I know, really.
Tell us about the acting part.
Well, so that's all I ever wanted to do was to be an actress.
Even before this?
Oh, yeah. I never planned on comedy. This just came on my lap. It's all Jerry's fault. I just wanted to be an actress. But you know what?
So is this the form that... actress has taken?
No.
Or have you also done other?
What happened, it got me, it limited me.
Oh.
It limited me because I focused so much on, I wanted to educate people with deafness. And so it limited me to the point where the industry just sees me as a deaf actress. And it's not fair because I don't sign. fluently, oh, you know. Uh-huh. And so whenever there was an audition, it was always for a deaf actress, and it always made me feel like that's not who I am, and I'm not going to play a deaf signing actress when there's deaf actors out there that signs and don't have a voice.
Yes.
I've worked hard in keeping my voice, and I still go to speech therapy to this day. I make a living on this mouth. Who would think? Oh, my God, I sounded so Jewish for a minute.
That was really excellent. Is that okay that you're doing all this now and not so much the acting?
Well, the truth of the matter is I do more motivational speaking. And what happened was I was the first hearing impaired comic out there that was really advocating for other children. Mm-hmm. And because of that, parents were writing me in need for help for their kids. So I kind of drifted out into society in helping parents become advocates. And then about 20 years ago, I met up with this young lady named Michelle Chrissy, who is a pathologist. See, I used to travel all over the country finding out what was a good deaf program out there for the kids who want to have spoken language. Mm-hmm. And Michelle created this national theater group for deaf kids. And now we have an after-school program, and we're called No Limits.
I can do it. No limits. Yeah, I see the T-shirt.
That's our motto. I can
so
do
busy
it.
Looking at your gorgeous face, I never look down. That's just fabulous.
That's because there's no boobs in there to look for.
No, that's good.
But, yeah, that's my school.
And is that here locally? So you
we have one in L.A., one in Vegas, we just opened up one in Orange County. And my partner just came back from Africa because we were doing some work with Starkey Foundation.
Oh, nice.
So we make a difference.
These theater productions, the children who are acting are all deaf?
They're all deaf to spoken
degree.
Language.
A lot of times
is a lot of times deaf signing children have their schools for deaf signing. But a lot of kids with hearing devices and having a voice, they end up being mainstream, and they're the only one in the classroom that's wearing these big devices on their head, and they feel self-conscious, inadequate, feeling left out, not sure what's going on. So the theater group brings them together, and they see that they're not alone in the world.
Oh, that being not alone is critical for everybody.
So they have that opportunity. And the great thing about it, it's better than sitting down and teaching a speech class when the kids can become characters so they don't feel... And able to do something. And so it's awesome to watch their growth.
So then
now that we have the after-school program, it's because, look, 93% of deaf-speaking kids will graduate from high school with a third, fourth grade reading level.
Oh, I thought you were going to say something uplifting.
Because they don't put the facility, they don't give the speech. You give 15 minutes of speech therapy a week. It's not going to enable a child to learn a language.
Mm-hmm.
So they come to No Limits. They get one-on-one. It's a nonprofit. They learn. They speak. We get our kids. They're low-income families is what we work with. So we get kids at 5 years old. They don't even know their names yet.
Mm.
So we have to get them caught up to the age level.
Do you also work with parents to teach them how to pay more attention to these children?
No, we teach the parents to put them in a closet, Janet. No.
Sounds like you don't have to teach them that if they don't know their name at five.
Well, honey, when they're a low-income family, they don't understand what's going on. So what we do is we have parent education programs.
Oh, okay. That's what I'm asking.
So we do have.
Okay.
Yeah. You know, so what we do is the parents have to come to school every Saturday for 4 hours, just for the parents, to learn how to be advocates, to know how to do IPEs, know how to go to the schools, know what the kids' needs are. They know how to communicate with these facilities and make sure that the kids get their
needs. That's bringing them out of the isolation also.
Well, it gives them a voice
for
their kids.
Yeah.
But more importantly, when you're working with low-income families, they're so self-conscious of what they don't know that when you give them knowledge, it gives them strength and courage. And it was beautiful to watch the parents grow right along with the child.
I would imagine.
Yeah. And you know what? I think our parents should learn to be advocates for their kids with or without a disability.
Of course.
Because too many people just use the schools as babysitting.
Ah, yes.
So, yeah, so that's my little stuff I do on the side, as well as my motivational speaking. That I love. I love doing motivational speaking. I love changing people's lives.
And by the way, yes, and you know, when you talk about wanting to be an actress, they say that, 90% of teaching is performance.
But, yeah.
It is the acting. I mean, that's how you get into people's hearts, is you present things in such a way that, yes.
But if I had a dream, my dream would be to be able, I travel all over the world, and it would be nice to be able to just get up in the morning, go to work, and come home, and not have an airplane in between.
Oh.
The traveling is hard.
It's hard. And you're saying that, and yet you keep doing it. So the pull of doing it is stronger than that you'd like to get up
You go where God takes you. You don't argue with him. I've learned that the hard way. Sorry, didn't mean to say that. But, yeah, you go where the good Lord takes you. You never know what seeds you're planting and whose life. And it's not me. It's the Holy Spirit. I'm just a vessel. I just walk all over the place and then say, okay, Lord, I'm here. If there's one child in this room that needs to hear your voice, by all means, let your words roll off my tongue for
them. Now, you have a whole wall full of pictures of children.
Yes.
And you said, those are my babies.
They're all babies.
Are these families forever more in touch with you? Do you write letters to each other?
Nope.
They're just always in your heart.
I plant the seed. I can't help your child. I don't live your child's life, but I can help you to learn to focus on the ability of the child and not the disability. People always tend to want to focus on what's not there.
Isn't that amazing?
And instead of what is there.
Mm-hmm.
And give that child, see the gift within that individual. I believe everybody has something to contribute in this world. But we get so caught up in this crazy world and judgment and labeling.
Okay, how are your parents with you? Because when I talk to people, disabled or not disabled or every facility working, doesn't matter. When you hear from people who are enjoying life and are really successful, what they always say is, I wasn't coddled. I fell down and my mother said, oh, come on, get up.
Now, my parents.
There was a lot of that.
When I was growing up, it was like the doctors put the hearing aids on it and you're fixed. Unfortunately, the hearing aids weren't made for my loss and they were painful.
Oh.
So my naive mind, I thought I was being punished and not knowing why I had to wear these and my brothers didn't.
But your parents were just unaware.
They were unaware. Uh-huh. They weren't educated. That's why it was important for me.
But how were they with you personally in terms of your own abilities to do things?
No communication.
Oh, really? Oh,
no,
that's
communication,
sad.
No connection.
Mm-hmm.
And that. So I created the connection with my parents when I got older, when they needed. See, I learned a long time ago.
Oh, and you're taking care of your mother now?
I'm taking care of both my parents right now.
Oh.
And the funny thing is I have every right, and my brother would tell you the same thing, to walk away from both my parents because of our past. But that's exactly what it is, a past. And I don't need a mom
mm-hmm.
or a dad today.
Yes.
But they need a daughter.
Oh, my goodness, yes.
So no matter what, that's where it goes in place. And the best gift anybody can give themselves is the gift to forgive.
Yes,
because
of course.
Once you forgive, you set yourself free.
Oh, that's true. I mean, I always am so aware of that. If you let somebody else off the hook, you're off that hook too.
Exactly.
Yes, you're stuck on the same hook.
So I learned about a love that I didn't know that was there. And I'm grateful. I'm very, very grateful. So they didn't know what to do with me when I was younger. They were young, too.
Yes.
Mom knew how to cook a meal. She knew how to keep a roof over her head. Dad was a good provider. They just didn't know how to communicate with us.
Mm-hmm. And sometimes
and
parents
just
are
me.
Given challenges they don't know, didn't expect, and don't know what to
no,
do.
No, that's
what
they, too many people think, okay, now's the time in my life I'm supposed to get married and have a family. Well, if you're not ready and you're not capable, why do you have to follow the rules of society? Why not live your life to what you want? You know, having a baby only lasts a short period of time because before you know it, they're teenagers and you don't even recognize this baby no more.
Yeah.
So it's all about the baby. But no, it's a human being.
Yes.
And they're not a possession. They're there to get the best of your knowledge. And you have to guide them.
There is more awareness today because there's more communication. And as you say, through the theater group, children who are the only one in their class. Suddenly they're together, and they're not the only one. They're part of a society. They're part of humankind.
You create that community for them.
Yes.
Because, see, there is not a community. There's a deaf community for deaf signing, but there's not a community for deaf speak. And that's what we're trying. My goal right now in life is to put, there's deaf signing and there's hearing speak, and it's black and white. Where deaf speak is in the middle, and they're gray. And my journey right now is to put color to it. Give them a voice. And don't have people say, well, because you wear a hearing aid, you're deaf. No. Well, because you have a speech impediment, you're deaf. No. When I take my hearing aid off, yes, I'm deaf. But when I'm in a part of society and I have my hearing aid on.
Okay, so I was going to say just that phrase. That's the kind of the key, is part of society.
Yeah.
So people can be one.
Label. It's all about labels.
Oh,
we all wear labels. And I don't care with or without a disability. I'm a doctor. I'm a police officer. I'm a nurse. No.
Right.
What's your first name?
Yes.
Well, Janet. And I go, okay, Janet, then that's who you are.
I agree.
What you do for a living,
yes.
What you do for your passion, it's just a part of you, but it's not who you are. Right. You still always have to know who your core is. And yes. Do you have a good heart? Do you have compassion? Do you love people? Do you not? You know, who are you as an individual? That's my focus on helping people find.
That is the best focus. That is wonderful. I have a question because I am so about letters and love letters. And you kind of started off with, I mean, I was really struck by it and touched by it, that even what started you off was a letter. Now, you say you weren't a good writer.
No.
I just want to say that in writing a letter about yourself or writing any kind of a love letter, if you can put what you feel to paper in any way whatsoever, you're a good enough writer.
I mean, I've learned that because anybody else can correct your grammar.
Right.
You know, I don't have to learn. Yes. I don't know where the period, the commas. I mean,
By the way, bad grammar or not knowing where the period or comma, that's also important information in a letter. It just means somebody hasn't had the opportunity or the time to learn it. And let's see what's in there that made that true.
Yeah.
But the point is that starting with a letter, it was your handwriting.
Yeah.
And signed by you. Do you still have that letter? Did Jerry give it back to you?
No, I don't know what she. I don't know whatever happened to it. They probably threw it away. But
have you ever written other letters to people? Have you ever written a love letter, any letter of friendship or forgiveness or memory or anything? Do you tend to?
I write a love letter in a journal every night to God for my gratitude. I write, and even the days I'm not feeling well, but at least I got to wake up. And I made a vow a long time ago, God, you know, I would put a smile on someone's face that day or make them laugh. Well, one day I was so sick with the flu, and I couldn't get my head up. And I said, I won't lay my head on a pillow till I know I've made somebody smile that day. And I couldn't get my, I wanted to lay down, and I'm saying, God, please, I got to lay down. This is really killing me here. And before you know it, the person who needed the laugh was me, and I made myself laugh. I made myself laugh. I go, I'm bartering for a pillow, the one, please. And then I started laughing, and I said, okay, it was me, because I'm not going to go out today.
Perfect insight.
Yeah.
I have a question for you. Journaling is wonderful, and anything, any kind of written communication, I think, is wonderful, because you think in a different way, you know, more carefully and more completely when you're writing something down by hand, I think. And I was just wondering, what would it be like to you? I mean, I happen to like this. So if you wrote one of those love letters to God and you actually mailed it to yourself and then you see that show up on your mail pile, and usually the feeling that people get is the you who wrote it and the you who reads it are two different people.
Well, I understand that. Yeah.
If you want your mail pile,
but if the letter came back to me that I wrote to God, I would be like, "Hey, what up? Did I get the wrong address?"
Well, that's all part of.
You know, but the thing is,
there's something about.
But I think more people.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to change your life, you have to change your words. Okay, if you want to change your life, you have to change your words, and 90% of the words that you have accumulated have come from your family, your background, your upbringing,
yes.
Even your beliefs.
Right.
And one of the greatest things that I was ever blessed with was to pack my car and leave Ohio.
Oh, did you do that just on your own?
I had gotten run over by a Jeep. I was laid up for 5 years, and I just wanted to.
How do we miss that?
And then we just go right into my car. When I started driving, I got into a car. I was living on welfare. I was living on $100 a month.
In Ohio?
In Ohio. Mm-hmm. And so my naive young mind was saying, oh, let's leave and get rid of all the problems. Little did I know, I came with me.
Right.
And I lived in my car
for
about 3 months.
Wherever you go, there you are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I lived in my car for about 3 months. And then I think that was the best thing I could have done, was separate myself from my family, because you can't really find yourself with your family. I mean, if you're in a good environment with your family, fine. But if you're not, you need to separate yourself so you can. It's like, you know, when you're in the store, you're overwhelmed. But if you're outside looking in the window, you kind of get a better idea what's going on.
Also, if you take the action to leave,
yeah,
you've sent yourself another little message, which is now it's going to be me and my voice, and I'm not, yes, all
yeah.
kinds of.
So, yeah, but what I didn't know is when I left, I took my mother with me.
We all do.
You know, her negative vocabulary, her anxiety, her paranoia, all that stuff became mine. because I was only copying what I grew up with. And so I had to recognize what's mine and what's not.
How did you do that?
The frustration. I'm like, why am I struggling within myself that I'm really a loving person, but I'm saying mean things?
Okay, so it was your own intelligence that got you to realize this, ultimately.
Actually,
a good critical look.
And you want to know what I did?
No.
I went to people. I went to people I loved that I thought I could trust, my friends. And I said, look, do me a favor. My biggest transformation was when my godchild was born.
Oh.
And I told Jane, I said, Jane, I don't want to be my mom. Mm-hmm. I don't want to be my mom when I grow up, when Julia grows up. Mm-hmm. I want to love her unconditionally. Mm-hmm. So if you see me misbehaving or saying the wrong kinds of words or whatever have you, correct me. Mm-hmm. Stop me in my tracks.
And Julia is?
Julia is my godchild.
Oh, that's, okay, the name of your godchild.
And
yes.
So she... Jane had no problem. She's from England. She's like a white black woman. Don't be talking to my girl like that, you know? And it made me aware. And I asked friends, I would always say, help me correct my speech. If I say the word wrong, don't say it because I'm deaf. Say I need to correct it because I don't know otherwise.
So it is your basic real intelligence and loving nature that came through. I mean, that's really the answer somehow.
Well, yeah, because yes. I didn't want to be ignorant. I don't want to be mean.
Yeah.
And so, I don't know if you know who Tony Robbins is.
Yes,
now,
of course.
He had a thing. I spoke for him for many years.
Oh.
And he had a thing, and he said, he goes, what do you want to get out of this seminar? It was called Date with Destiny.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, I want my mother out of me.
Yes.
And just saying that made me aware that I wasn't true to who I am. And so I had this, and that's when I started writing my love letters to God.
Okay, that's wonderful. What about? There's so much here that I'm my own little head is spinning for what I want to know next. How long and how did you come to speak for Tony Robbins? How did you learn about each other?
That was funny. I was in a comedy club in Oceanside, and it was one of my first gigs. And the show wasn't starting on time. I've always been very anal about the clock. And if the audience is here, now is your time to perform. They're here. And it was like 8 o'clock. I go, how come we're not starting? Well, we're waiting for Tony Robbins. Who the hell is Tony Robbins? And I didn't know who it was by name. And so 15 minutes after, there's still no Tony Robbins. It was his birthday, and he was going to have all these people come in, about 30 people. So I said, look, we got to start. It's not fair. So about 20 minutes go by, and they finally, Tony Robbins, as soon as I saw him, I knew who it was.
Mm-hmm.
And so I ragged on him, big motivational speaker, can't even tell what time it is to get here, you know, blah, blah, blah. Little did I know that is an issue for him at that time. And so after I was done, and in the parking lot, he was there with about 5 or 6 other people, and I'm, oh, Christ, they're going to beat me up, you know. And I went up to him, and I just said, I really want to thank you for what you do for people.
Oh.
It really means the world, because a lot of people... Basically, motivational speakers are nothing more than parents you didn't have. And they don't do anything but teach you what you should have been taught.
Yes.
But now you're starting at a later time in life. So Tony said, you know what? I'm doing this thing called Life Mastery. Would you be willing to come and do your comedy? And then I can ask you some questions afterward.
Uh-huh.
So I said, yeah, sure. So that was in San Diego. Got on stage, did the comedy. And then I yelled to the back of the audience with Tony was, and I said, hey, Tony, did you want to ask me questions? Do you want me to keep going? He's like, well, keep going. So I shared my stories about, you know, my birth, molestation, run over by a Jeep, cancer, twice. I shared all this stuff. And so I shared it on the stage. And so Tony, I go, Tony, I'm done. I can't come up with any more stuff. So he comes up on stage, and he was speechless. And I'm like, I, Kathy Buckley, in this moment, made Mr. Anthony Robbins speechless, you know, and he became my baby brother that day.
Oh, that's wonderful. So you had a few other issues that were mountains you had to climb that you just didn't really have time to go in here now. I mean, you mentioned a couple of things.
Yeah.
Cancer, and so that's something that you went through.
Mm-hmm. Twice.
Twice, and you're okay.
Think I'm okay.
Oh, my goodness. Well, you know, you look at somebody who looks so perfect as you do, and of course you don't know what goes on inside or what has been faced, because you can't see it.
Yeah.
So, yes.
You know, people need to look within themselves. Too many people are too worried about what other people are thinking about them. which is really weird because I don't know why you would compliment yourself to think anybody's thinking about you at all.
There you go.
You know, and so, but I...
You probably don't take selfies.
Yeah, no, not at all. And so, but it, people need to look at other people for who they are without expectation.
Oh, that without expectation. So it's really nice to meet somebody and... Who are you? Name only. And then you wait till you're told the rest somehow.
Yeah.
Somebody feels like sharing who they are.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
So people don't listen to people's heart. They listen to their words. And their words can be confusing. The great thing about having a hearing loss, between the physicality of somebody communicating with you mm-hmm. and their words, the physicality is more honest than their words.
Oh, for sure.
And but people don't listen to the physicality. They don't listen to their facial expressions. They don't watch how they're looking at you when you're talking to them. So that thing, so people don't, they get their words out. People want to be heard, but they don't want to be listened. You know, they don't want to listen.
Yeah.
So it's sad.
You know, when you're talking about the physicality of it, I'm guessing you've never done this, but maybe you have. You don't need to. Is when you're watching something on TV that's very dramatic and you turn off the sound just for the heck of it, just to see what's really going on.
Mm-hmm.
And you can see where the falseness is. You can see where the insincerity is.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, it's just a wonderful thing.
It's a little art for me. It's like my little... People do crossword puzzles. I do that with the TV.
Do you?
Oh, yeah.
Oh.
I look in the mirrors to see if I can find a camera. You know, I do all that stuff because my eyes are my ears.
Yes.
You know, so I look for all those things.
God, I love talking to you. I'm going to have to say thank you for doing this, and we're kind of out of time.
Oh.
But, gosh, can we do this again and you'll talk about some of the things that we didn't have time for today?
I would love to, Janice.
Oh,
I would love to. I mean, if we can plant a seed in somebody else's life together, I would be honored.
Well, and that seems, that, I mean, that's what you do day by day, is plant the seeds. And you not only do so much, but you are so much. And I could listen for hours and would like
to... Well, you need to get a life, sweetheart, if you can listen for hours.
I could listen for hours and call that a very dear part of my life.
Ah, thank you.
For sure. Yeah, you have a lot to say. Well, I want to thank you for doing this with me. And I want to ask you one quick question.
Go for it.
If you were to write a love letter to a person right now, who would it be to? You include yourself in that.
I include myself in that?
Yes.
My dad.
Oh, you would. Okay, you said that very fast. So
yeah. He's dying.
Would you do that?
I would.
Write a love letter to him?
I do already. I've been writing, but he had dementia right now.
Oh, so but you're actually sending him letters that he gets in his mail?
Oh, I call him.
But what about something? What about
He's
something?
Blind.
Oh,
he's blind.
Okay.
So I write the letters and I read them.
Okay.
You know, so he can hear me on the phone, but he can't see anymore. And so that love letter would be.
But I'll tell you why. You know, there's something about the part of sending a love letter, even to somebody who can't see or somebody who can't hear. They can still feel. And to touch a piece of paper, to touch something that's felt the touch of your hand, has kind of a magic all its own.
You know, it's funny. I hear you talk about the paper and the writing and all this, and I see your passion in it. I miss people's voices. I mean, they text, they email, they Facebook. I miss people's. I spent my whole life learning how to communicate.
Yes.
Now nobody wants to talk to me.
I can't imagine why.
You know, and so it's frustrating for me because I'm not a good writer, and I see how people, and I'm always afraid, I see how people misinterpreting writing because they read with their intention and not with the intention that's being written sometimes.
Oh, that's true. That's a really good point. But the thing about writing a letter is once you express yourself, you've done your part.
Yeah.
That's the gift. You put it in an envelope and you mail it. You're not responsible for the other end. And I think usually, and I know that you would agree with this, that what comes from the heart enters the heart.
Yeah.
And more often than not, if something is clean and without undertones of anything icky, they don't misinterpret it.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, if you ever feel like actually writing a letter and sending it to somebody in your own handwriting, I know what a treasure that will be.
I think it's a treasure nowadays, especially when they do it by their own handwriting. You know what's scaring me? They're going to be taking cursive away from the schools.
Oh, they've already done it.
They have?
Oh, in lots of schools. And I have one guy, I'm going to tell this again to you, and I just love talking about this one woman who was lamenting the fact that her 6-year-old son mentioned that they're not teaching handwriting. And she was horrified.
I am.
And this very smart mother said to her 6-year-old son, you know, if you learn handwriting, cursive, you will be able to read the secret thoughts of grown-ups. And that kid was on board. Because you are how you write. Handwriting carries so much. Okay, I'm going to tell you goodbye, and I'm going to come back.
Well,
we're going to talk more.
Talk about goodbye right away. Bye,
yes,
Janet!
I know, because I'm taking advantage here a little bit, too. But I could go on for ages. Okay, thank you, honey, for doing this with me.
And can I just say thank you to your listeners for taking the time out to opening up their ears and having an opportunity to learn more things through you and your guests. So thank you, listeners.
Okay, that's, yes, and it's going to be their benefit, you know.
It is.
Thank you, honey.
So.
This is just, you're wonderful. Okay, until next time, I hate to let you go. Until next time, this is Janet Gallen saying goodbye and
Kathy Buckley.
Talk to you later.
See you later.